Waldorf. So, like, the older children, this is according to my one friend.
I'm so into that.
Like, the older children make little, like, fairy houses and, like, little puppet fairies and dolls of fairies and kind of hide them around for the younger children. And
I mean, me and my friends still make fairy houses.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Pretty cool.
Get them young.
Yeah, get them young. Progressive is... has some more leeway. Progressive education is generally project-based.
Progressive education, which is what you are currently practicing at your current school where you
teach. My school is not a progressive school, but that's the training that I have.
And that's where, but that's also the school that you were educated in as a young child.
Yeah. So my mom is a staunch believer in progressive education. So I would hear her talking about it when I was growing up. And that's what inspired me to go to graduate school. And the graduate school I went to only teaches progressive education. So it was really like I drank the Kool-Aid about this particular way of thinking. And so one element of it is that it's project-based. And I always tell people to think about the movie School of Rock.
I've never seen this movie.
So this substitute teacher is actually like a rock and roll musician.
Is it Jack Black?
Yeah.
Jack Black is almost definitely in that movie. I'm like 90% sure.
I don't remember who's in it, but you can look it up on the internet. He is a substitute teacher, doesn't know how to teach, and he's like, I'll just make all of the kids in a band, because that's what I know how to do. But it kind of shows that each student has a separate role in the band. Some people are doing tech, some people are writing music, some people are doing different instruments. But that through that, they learn history and science and math and, you know, philosophy. They sort of learn everything through doing this huge project of trying to put a band together. And that's the project approach, which is part of progressive education.
So you're telling me that School of Rock actually has, like, a foundation in educational theory?
Yeah. You should watch it.
Wow. Is it a good movie? You like it?
I like it. I might be biased.
No, hey.
I thought it was really good. It's cute.
You're a lot more knowledgeable about
this
than me.
My mom loves it. She loves that movie.
I mean, that's two, like, very knowledgeable professionals in the education space.
Yeah, who recommend
endorsing this, like, okay.
Yeah. So I would recommend that. And so that's project approach. And then the other thing is that it's child-centered, which means you're guided by the children's questions and the children's curiosity. So if a kid comes in and says, you know, where does food come from? Or whatever little children ask, then that could guide your entire curriculum. You can go visit a farm. You can go interview the guy at the corner store. You can talk about pricing. You can talk about economics and biology.
That's awesome. That's rad. Is that system... I mean, is it sustainable? Sustainable is the wrong word. Is it self-correcting? Right? Because I feel like the first thing that my mind goes to is, well, like, what if my kid is just obsessed with, like, beaver tails?
And we spend,
like, 3 months talking about why beavers build dams. We never get to anything else. That being said, I remember my elementary school, which was a Montessori school. We spent a hell of a lot of time on beavers. And it was rad.
So the idea is that it's better for you to just study one topic, just be an expert in humpback whales and study it from like kindergarten to 12th grade than to essay a lot of different topics.
Who says this?
This is the progressive philosophy because
they actually encourage specialization.
Way that it's implemented, you usually have units where maybe you would do three different units a year or more, but they would say to take it to the extreme that it's better to have depth than breadth. Because when you're guided by your natural curiosity, then you're learning how to teach yourself something for the rest of your life. So then if you want to go to medical school or law school or anything you ever want to learn, you have the tools to know how to understand something deeply. And since you can't actually understand everything deeply in one lifetime, better to understand one thing deeply. Because everything connects to everything else. If you're an expert in humpback whales, you're going to need to know biology and physics and chemistry and history and politics and about the environment and globalization. I mean, it's going to connect to absolutely every philosophy and literature. There's so many ways to approach one topic. And just the way children's brains work, often they are more interested if you just keep hammering into one topic and everything feels connected. I think when students get lost is when they just don't understand how something is connected to something they care about. So that would be the idea, is a child would be guided by their own passion. But I went to a progressive school, and there are certain things I never learned. For example, cursive, but I've never needed it. And my multiplication tables.
You don't need it?
I don't need it.
I don't know.
And the thing is, if I did need it, I would just learn it quickly, because I know how to teach myself things.
You know how to learn.
I know how to learn.
You learned how to learn.
Yeah. That's the basic idea.
That's very powerful.
And how to like privilege my curiosity and take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. I've never thought about it that way. That's really interesting.
And I think, so to answer the question of why, how did I become a teacher? I think one, I was obsessed with my teachers, probably because they were amazing. Two is I heard my mother talking about education all the time. I thought it was interesting. And the third reason is I just think I have a very myopic view. I don't think I knew how to think about any other jobs, because that's the only thing I saw every day was teachers.
So when did you decide you got rooted in this idea of you potentially being a teacher at a young age?
Yeah, but I think that's part of my personality. Like, when I first started learning to drive when I was 16, I was the worst driver ever, and I got in so many accidents. And I think it was because every time I had ever been in a car before, I also didn't know how to get around the town at all. I only just was in the passenger seat looking at the car itself. Like, I don't think I was looking out the window or paying attention to where I was. I was just like, I'm in this car. That's all that there is. And to like an extreme degree. And I think that that's the thing about being a teacher, is I was just like in school, and I was like, this is what adults do. They teach in a school, because what else is there in the world except for what I'm doing? It's very like self-centered. Because my siblings had the same upbringing. It didn't occur to them to be teachers. So I think I have that extra piece of just being very curious in what's right in front of me.
How about that? What was it like kind of engaging with your mother about, do you think that she pushed you to study this particular educational philosophy that you were raised in, that she believed so deeply in? Do you think that there was,
what's the connection there? I think she influenced me, but definitely I wouldn't ever say pushed me, but I just was so interested in it and passionate about it. And the first job I had actually was working for my mom at a second school that she started that was a progressive charter school.
Mm.
So, she and I get along pretty well, and, I had a great time working with her, and I actually advised her and helped her in some capacity write the charter for the school. So I think she and I are just very aligned in our beliefs about education, and I think definitely she inspired me.
I want to hear all about charter schools, you know. I want
to
hear all about it, and I am going to be really minimal in what I add, because I feel that what I know is quite limited. I feel like there are certain topics, and the two that come to mind are education and homelessness, where the more I learn about the policy environment, the less like I feel like I know, and the harder it is for me to feel really confident in taking a stand, even though I do feel like we live in a really intense world of what I like to call moral absolutes, but maybe I should better refer to as immediate moral problems, crises, such as the fact that a lot of people who are under-resourced or have no resources cannot get a quality education.
Right.
And so I've heard these stories and these narratives and read these pieces about the way in which charter schools may worsen that divide.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I've also heard and read a lot of things that are really positive and hopeful. You might have told me that. I'm really curious to know your thoughts on all of this. Yeah. I don't even know where to start.
Oh, I have so many thoughts. Well, I think that I think there are a lot of buzzwords I think this moral absolutism is a really, really important idea to think about. There are a lot of buzzwords of things that people are like, oh, I'm against that. And I think it's really detrimental to solving real problems.
And just to be clear, I'm not sitting here being like, I'm against charter schools.
No. Right? No, but I think that the way, but if you were, that would be okay too. I think, I think there are a few things like that. Charter schools, gentrification, genetically modified organisms. Yeah. Where all of those things.
Like, what's the O stand for?
Yeah. I've been thinking a lot of other things. But I think that all of those things are so multifaceted.
Of course they are.
And it's always best to try to like break it down into like, well, what are the things that you're against? And I think that a place people can find common ground is just believing that all children deserve a good education and that schools should not be inequitable and that the public school system needs to be better.
I can get behind that.
Yeah, I can get down with that too.
If anyone else is listening to this, can you get behind that?
So charter schools, yeah, they're very controversial. I think that, so generally what a charter school is it's an independent public school.
Yeah.
It is publicly funded. Also, a lot of times they are funded by fundraising, similar to what an independent school would do.
When you say an independent school, you mean a private school?
An independent school means that they don't have to follow the prescribed curriculum of public schools in terms of, I don't even remember what all the things are called, the No Child Left Behind and the Common Core curriculum and all of these things, these mandates. So if you're independent, it just means you have permission to not follow the mandates. You could be a private school. You could be a charter school.
So charter schools and private schools are a subset of independent schools.
Yeah.
And independent schools could be public or private.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's not about where they get their funding. It's about are they independent from these prescribed curriculum expectations.
I definitely want to talk to you about policy, but I am curious to know, I think where I want to start actually is more about your experience. Where did we start on this?
Oh, well,
your family was involved in the founding of one?
Yeah. So my mom started a charter school. So
how old were you when that happened?
Right after college. And that's why it was like a really good first job to help her start that school and then be part of it. Its first year, it was really exciting. It was so exciting.
Interesting. Were you at that time, were you aware of the controversy around them?
I was.
Did that change your, and there's no wrong answer to this.
No.
Did it change your thinking about being involved in it or like, were you? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I understand.
So what was it like?
Well, I mean, just to speak a little bit more about the controversy, I like the idea of independent public schools. I think that's really important. I don't like the idea of prescribed curriculum for every public school. I think that it would be great to have a variety of different types of public schools. I think it would be great to have different philosophies of public schools. I think it would be great to have it be easier for just interesting variety and more human connection to the curriculum and more community-based curriculum. And I don't think it's necessary for everything to be completely prescribed. And I think it's really difficult, to make that work for everybody. And there's I think different towns and different communities and, so many different, there's people with different interests. Maybe someone wants to go to art school or whatever it is, and then there's also neurodiversity. So there's this idea that people learn differently. So they might need different types of education just based on how their brain works. So there's so many reasons that we might need different types of education.
When you say different types of education, you mean between different schools, not necessarily within one.
Sure, it could be within one.
Or could be within one. The thing that I think
I guess I mean like independent public schools, I think, are important.
Yeah. I mean, I can get behind the that desire and that need that you're describing. Mm-hmm. The thing that I think about, mm-hmm. right, I think about Betsy DeVos's confirmation hearings, mm-hmm. and I think about Susan Collins deciding to vote, senator from Maine, decided to vote against Betsy DeVos, and the reasoning she gave, I don't know if this is the real reason or if it was more political than this, but she talked about these isolated schools in, like, rural Maine, mm-hmm. and she said, what about these folks who don't necessarily have the ability to choose between one school and another because of the fact that they're so rural? Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's just something that I'm thinking about, and you don't have to directly address that if you were going to go in a different direction.
No, like, I think that's it's all...
Because you said it could be within one school, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I think just this idea of... What I saw with the charter school I worked at was excitement and joy and community involvement and parents in the school every day excited. And I think people see that and then compare it to their own school and there's jealousy and anger and sadness. But for me, the way to solve that problem is to have more schools like that mm-hmm. and to have hopefully every school like that mm-hmm. as much as possible, just more independent schools. Rather than saying, let's make this against the rules. What I think is unethical is that some charter schools are for profit. And that is unethical. You shouldn't be making a profit on a school. I mean, that's not on a public school. Because the only way to do that is, it's essentially, like, and I'm being very radical, but it's by stealing, right? Like, all of the money should go back into helping children.
Do you think the profit is theft?
I do. I think a profit on a public service is theft. Absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, I feel like...
So I think for me, I think those two things are... What's the word? They're like I don't know. People...
What two things?
The idea of like being against for-profit schools mm-hmm. and being against charter schools. I think those are two separate things I'm very much against.
I think that a lot of left... critique of charter schools and of, and I do not mean to lump your mm-hmm. thoughts in with this, but I've been reading a lot of like critique of the Betsy DeVos agenda. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I read a lot of like, we are against charter schools and for-profit mm-hmm. schools. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like they're in the same sentence. So I think mm-hmm. it's interesting that you're kind of teasing out a bit of nuance in there.
Yeah. For me, it sounds like there's a lot of difference. Yeah. I think it would be really sad if we didn't get to have any independent public schools because people were against schools for profit. I just think it's a very separate mm-hmm. issue.
Yeah.
And I think that community led small independent schools with an independent philosophy is just a great thing. It's a beautiful, exciting thing. What's sad is that we need more of them. We need more schools that people are excited about and feel invested in and that the parents and community all feel involved in. And I think that, I don't know, the way that I see it is charter schools or independent schools are the chance to have that. I think the other criticism is that they take away money from the system. Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of the work that my mom does is defending that. So I might have a biased perspective.
That's okay. I wanted to talk to you.
She would definitely say that they receive a lot less money than other public schools because they had to buy their own building. They only get the amount of money that's the per student rate, whatever that is. I don't remember how much it is per year, but that would be the same as the other schools would get, but the other schools get their building paid for. So she would say they get less. And then also, often independent schools become very popular with children with special needs. So I think they have just a really high percentage of children with special needs, which is awesome and great, but also requires additional resources that then come out of their pocket. So she would say that they are running a school for a lot less money than other schools.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. It's a lot less. And that they, because they're smaller and they're independent, they can be more creative about how to spend that money so they're more effective with it.
I feel like I know what the answer to this is going to be, but I'm guessing you're going to tell me that public education fails students with special needs.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Worse than a student who, I don't even know what you would call a student without special needs.
Neurotypical.
Neurotypical.
So if they're a child, you say they're typically developing, and if they're an adult, you would say they're neurotypical because they're not really developing anymore. We're not developing
anymore. We're not developing anymore.
I mean, we are, but just that's sure. the way that the language is used. Absolutely. It fails them. And that's one of the complications of the work that I do, is that I work for private independent schools. I work with children.
You work with a private independent school right now.
Right now I do. And I have worked with them.
Aren't all private schools independent?
Ooh.
By definition?
Yes.
Based on my understanding.
Yeah. I guess a private school is a subset of one type of independent school. Yeah. But the reason that I specify that is because we're independent and in some ways we're private, but we get public funding. So all private schools that serve children with special needs, each child has the right to sue the government.
Is this a New York State thing?
No, this is a national thing. To get their private education paid for. Because it is part of the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act, which I don't remember what year that was passed, but the national law saying that if you can prove that your local public school is not meeting your needs, then they will pay for you to go to private school. So the way that...
Kind of like a fancy voucher system.
Yeah, I think voucher, I don't know how much money vouchers offer, but this is like a tremendous amount of money. And I'm not sure if they pay for the whole school, but the schools that I work for charge between like $45,000 and $90,000 a year.
Wow.
Special education is incredibly expensive.
Wow.
You need a really high ratio of teachers to students, and you need a lot of extra facilities and materials and just...
So you're telling me if I'm a poor working class immigrant family, let's say, I don't have a lot of social capital, and I've got a child with special needs, I can sue the government.
Yes.
I don't really fully understand what that process would involve, and we don't have to get into it, but I can get public money to send my child to an expensive private school.
Yeah. Mind-blowing, isn't it?
As a federal policy?
Yeah.
Huh.
That's true all over the country. The reason it's more popular here is because there are more schools here.
In New York City?
Huge city.
Yeah.
So in a smaller city, there might not even exist any school for a kid with special needs, right? So you wouldn't have that option. But here there are a few. And so, yeah, so anyone could do that. But it is generally people who have that information who's not publicized. It's people who know how to get lawyers or can afford lawyers.
Yeah.
It's people who are very literate in the legal system. And then there's this other piece that is even more complicated, which is, what is a disability? Right? What is a learning disability, especially? So for some people, they might look at their child who is getting an F or a C minus, and they say, well, you know, some people fail. It's fine. So part of being, it's within the normal human range of things you can do. And some people will look at their child getting like a B in school and say, my child must have a severe problem because why are they not getting an A? So a learning disability itself is so contextual and so much about parent expectations and the expectations of the environment that you're in.
Which we're really talking about class.
Absolutely. Yeah. Not always, but yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. We're talking about class because disability is completely connected.
Not always, but often.
Yeah. But disability is completely connected to perceptions of economic ability to make money later on in your life, right? So something is going to be considered a disability if it could inhibit your economic viability.
Your earning potential.
Your earning potential, right?
Well, that's
totally connected. Yeah, because like dyslexia, in an agrarian society, it wouldn't really be a disability if you can't read, right? Or I feel like Asperger's, for example, could be perceived as more of a disability or less of a disability, depending on do we need... often people on the spectrum are really good at methodical thinking, like computer programming and things like that. So do we need more people like that right now? If so, then we're going to start validating that identity a little bit more.
Mm.
Whereas there's this perception that there are more people on the autistic spectrum now. And I think that that's not true. I think they used to just be all called either insane or idiots or retarded or, you know, so it's just, it's these all kinds of
things. Brilliant.
Yeah, but 100 years ago, it's like, what, do you have a skill that we need? Can we recognize your brilliance?
Mm-hmm.
If not, if we don't understand you, then that's mm-hmm. a disability. And they shift throughout time periods, and they're different in different countries.
Mm-hmm.
There are disabilities we have that in other countries, they're like, we don't have that idea. So, yeah.
Okay, so you did this first job.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're fine. No. That's a beautiful tangent. You did this first job,
mm-hmm.
and it sounds like all throughout your career and through your life, even from a very young age, you were absorbing certain ideas about education and kind of developing your own educational philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you did this first job, and that kind of cemented your idea to become a teacher.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wanted to be a teacher, but I knew I needed to get a master's degree. The only place I wanted to study was the Bank Street College of Education because they teach this progressive philosophy.
Where is that?
That's in Morningside Heights.
In New York City.
In New York City. Yeah.
Here in New York, New York.
So I did not particularly want to live in New York. Which is funny because I've been here for 12 years. And I was like, that.
And
I was
like it.
I love it. I must love it. I don't know. and went to Bank Street and that was actually a con for me. I was like, I love everything about it except that it's in New York City.
Mm.
But then I fell in love with New York. But when I was a little kid, I always wanted to understand what my teachers were thinking. And I wanted to understand how did they learn how to do these projects and how did they come up with these ideas and learn how to speak to children in this way. I was obsessed with all my teachers because I could tell they were doing something different than other adults when they interacted with me. And I imagined that in teaching school that you would kind of pretend to be a child and that you would practice doing these different activities and like feel what it felt like as a child. And that's actually a lot of what we did at Bank Street, which was amazing. We would like do the games and activities and art projects as if we were children.
Did you guys do nap time?
Oh my gosh, that would be so amazing.
Can we do that?
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Yeah, no.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. I loved everything about it.
I have a question for you. Have any idea how many of your fellow students from Bank Street went into? Okay, you're focusing on.
So they train you in progressive education.
In progressive education. So virtually everyone who went to Bank Street probably went into independent schools.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, some public, some private, but independent. Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not always. Sometimes people really want to, you know, spread the philosophy into the traditional public schools. And sometimes people come in, if you have a principal who is permissive, they might let you do some of these projects and children directed philosophy. I don't know, the progressive philosophy. But I think a lot of those teachers get really burnt out because there's so much focus on the testing and this really prescribed curriculum that's not founded in how children naturally develop and learn, in my opinion. So I think a lot of them get frustrated and then go to independent schools, which is sad.
Huh. So you went to this school. I wanted to ask you about the population of that school served. So, and this is a general, maybe kind of charter school nuts and bolts question. Mm-hmm. Was it a lottery? Was it anyone?
Yeah.
It was a lottery.
Yeah. So my...
Because I'm sorry to interrupt, mm-hmm. but sure. Do regular public school, maybe this is a state thing. Mm-hmm. Is it like, if I live in this address, I go to this school?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the traditional way. And then there's magnet schools.
Federally.
Yeah.
But for your...
Well, there's different ways. There's magnet schools where maybe one school has like an engineering program. You can go to a different district, or an arts program. You can go to a different district. And then charter school, you can live anywhere and then you apply to go there and they choose by lottery. So my mom and me would say that that is actually inequitable.
The lottery system?
Mm-hmm, because it doesn't take into account how many people are applying. So, and who is applying. You can't control who is applying, right? So you might have one spot available and maybe between 50 and, you know, hundreds of applicants.
Are these real numbers you're talking about?
Absolutely, yes. So they had, I'm trying to think how many, they have thousands of applications every year, and I think they have like between 20 and 40 spots.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I'm not doing the math. But so definitely, and that's common for charter schools because people want another choice, right? And it's, and you know, they want the chance, they're hoping that they get selected. The problem is that there are a lot more affluent people who apply than people of color and people who are underserved and people working class. And so you just get this larger and larger pool of affluent white people. And so then when people look at the population of the school, they're like, oh, that's only serving white people. So that would be an easy problem to solve by just deciding, just like, you know, many colleges try to do this, where you decide, like, what do we want the breakdown of the school to be like? Do we want it to represent the town we're in? If we do, then we need to weight certain populations from the lottery, right? Just like you wouldn't want all boys or all girls or all people from exactly the same street. You just want some diversity.
Yeah.
You can.
Is that a policy question or is that more?
That's a policy question.
A North Carolina question?
No,
or federal?
It's a national.
It's all federal.
So it's illegal to weight it in any way. It has to be random, but it's not random by the applicants. And so at the school that my mom started, they spend a lot of time going door to door in black neighborhoods in the town and working with church leaders to try to get more African Americans and people of color to apply to the school. But it's also kind of unethical in a way because their chances of getting in are so low that it's not really a good use of their time, you know, if it's like a 1 in 50 or 1 in 100 chance. But they're just trying to combat how many affluent people who are probably going to send their kids to private school anyways are applying. Does that make sense? So,
yeah,
so the
completely.
Breakdown ends up being really not representative of the town. But again, that's not a reason to be against charter schools. Just fix that particular problem.
Are there other... I mean, I was going to be like, you know, if you could change one education policy, what would it be? You've already listed a couple.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are there other kind of policy tweaks you would make? Are there not even a tweak? Maybe it's a big one. Does other stuff come to mind with regards to making the job of a typical special needs educator easier?
Oh, yeah.
Or even just the easy, you know.
Well, I think a lot about, so I don't work in the public school system. And the reason that I don't is because even the application process I found to be so dehumanizing. It's just so bureaucratic and it doesn't feel, there's nothing about the process. Kind of like how I imagine signing up for the military is. Like, you apply, it's this really complicated system, and then they assign you a school that maybe is not in your neighborhood or is not representative of your philosophy. You get, like, stationed somewhere, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And even just the questions on the application, I don't really know how to explain, but the process seemed really not mm-hmm. human. And for me, so much about my work is very much about the human relationships I have with my administrators and principal and fellow teachers. And, I don't know. I think for me, that's why I work in private schools. And I know that that sounds, I don't know. It's a strange thing because I believe in public education, but, even when to get my master's degree, I had to spend a certain number of hours in public schools, and it's really harsh and dehumanizing, at least those schools that I were in, just how bureaucratic it is and how decisions are made not on an individual level. And not based on what is right for particular students, but just about test scores. And
can you give me an example of like one of when you say it's bureaucratic?
Just what I observed was really, really sad. It was just that there's this pressure to raise the test scores, that these